The city of Detroit is technically insolvent and suffers from an addiction to debt. Those words were used by Detroit's emergency manager, Kevin Orr, as he described the city's fiscal crisis at his first public meeting last night at Wayne State University. About 350 people were on hand at the beginning of the meeting, but about 250 made it into the meeting, which left about 100 left out because of overcrowding. Detroit Free Press columnist Rochelle Riley covered the meeting, and she joins us now. Rochelle, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you so much.
So let's start with what Kevin Orr told that crowd. Tell us, what was his exact message?
He literally held a session to tell the truth and to make sure that people understood that it was the truth. Some people have not believed it, coming from city council members or three mayors. Some people have not believed that the problem was beginning to be just totally unmanageable. So to hear it in broad terms for years and ignore it is one thing. To have somebody tell you, we now have to list all your assets, including the yard at the DIA and Belle Isle, which he said, by the way, that he will lease to the state. It was a reality call. It was a wake-up call and a reality check for people who just have not believed this until now.
So overall, would it be fair to say, although it was bleak, it was honest and believable?
It was totally honest. He was, the one thing that helps him in this, particularly in a community like Detroit, we talked for a long time about how Mayor Dave Bing came into office and he brought back integrity and honesty, but he's not a showman. He's not someone who, you know, evokes a lot of emotion. And Kevin Orr is charismatic. He wove into his answer stuff about how he grew up eating sugar sandwiches, you know, white bread spread with sugar and butter, and how he understands how hard this is. But it's necessary because there is no other way to do this except the way he's going to do this. And he's going to do what I've been telling people for months. He's going to have a very draconian but realistic plan for what has to happen. And he's going to have a bankruptcy filing, and then Detroit will have to choose. And I think that bankruptcy is probably going to wind up being the better of the two choices. But he, by the way, said bankruptcy is not a negative thing.
He said that.
He did.
How is it not a negative thing?
You know, when you look at personal bankruptcies and Chapter 11s and businesses, you know, I think people get a sense that there's some embarrassment, that it's awful, but they have to do it. They start over. I've never heard anybody trumpet their bankruptcy more than Donald Trump, you know, who talks about, you know, how he has overcome these things. It's a chance to start over. When you get yourself into this big a situation, and then somebody gives you a way out, even if it's a way out that, you know, will be nationally known, there will be some embarrassment. It will be the biggest municipal bankruptcy ever. The bottom line is, if you look on the other side, for the first time in a long time, Detroit will not be broke. It will not owe people more money than it can ever afford to pay back.
I was struck by when I was reading the account in today's Free Press and the way he spelled out just, you know, you could stop paying everything and everybody and you still couldn't clean out this debt.
There's literally no way. And thanks for reading it in the Free Press, by the way. when you're talking about $16 billion in long-term debt, and it's almost that high, and people seem to misunderstand that while we're having the debate, it's still climbing. And then you have the things that you have to pay all the time. Plus, you have fewer and fewer tax dollars coming in, and then there are tax dollars that you haven't collected. One gentleman stood up, you know, because there was a question and answer session, and he said, we've got $800 million out there. Why don't we go get that? He said, we can, but it wouldn't make a dent.
Wow. When you think that, that $800 million doesn't make a dent. Yet there are people there. As I'm looking at the story, there are many citizens. Your reporter quotes a woman named Marie Burke, and here's her quote. I think this is a manufactured crisis. There's plenty of other options the city should use to get itself out of debt. And we know she's not the only one to think that in terms of citizen attitudes. How do you crack through to say, you know what? Yeah, it is.
You know, he pulled out the slides. He showed what the problems were. He's explained it through the media. For weeks, anybody who doesn't believe it now, there isn't any way to get to them. Hmm. But that doesn't change what has to be done.
Now, last night at the meeting, Kevin Orr said the chances of avoiding that Chapter 9 bankruptcy are 50-50. But it sounds like you're hearing that it seems to be traveling down that path.
I think he's being hopeful to say 50-50. It depends on how long it takes and how much resistance he gets. And how much people understand between now and the time he presents them with the plan where Detroit actually is. And if there is still resistance, if there is still, you know, some sense that this just isn't going to work, we're not going to do it. And by the way, they don't have a choice. I mean, this is his decision. He can choose to do the things that he's going to do or just do the bankruptcy. The bankruptcy, while horrendous and, you know, literally putting your city and your livelihoods into the hands of a federal judge, and sometimes that goes on forever, is not a great thing. But, you know, again, when you're talking about some people who still don't get it, it's just a matter of whether he thinks what's possible and what's best, because he said he is going to do the job and he's going to be successful at the job. And I take him at his word.
Now I want to get into the atmosphere, the demeanor, the feel of the room, Rochelle, the folks inside that law school auditorium at Wayne State. What was it like?
Well, I can tell you first and foremost that the room was not large enough for the people who wanted to be there, but the room was large enough for the people he wanted to be there. The law school conference room, so it's the library, it's the mock courtroom. So he sat at the judge's bench, and several of the city council members and the financial advisory board sat in the jury box, and then residents sat on the first level and at the top level. So it was interesting that it's this room where judgments are made, even though they aren't real when they do them. But, you know, this was he has to make a judgment on Detroit. So I thought that symbolism was great. But because the room was small, there were lots of people who arrived and could not get into the room and had to stand outside. And they were not happy about that. They protested the whole time. They stayed until it was over. And I went through that crowd because, you know, I like to get a feel for the place. So, you know, most people went up early and set up and waited for it to start. I'm hanging out outside, and I almost got hurt trying to get into the building. But once inside, it was very orderly, and his staff made sure of that. They passed out cards for people to put their names and turn them in if they wanted to ask a question. They said they would call names, and they'd only have room for about 20 questions, which is what they took. And when someone yelled out, well, suppose we want to make a comment, or who's paying for the staff who's standing here? And it was an interesting question. I mean, the question wasn't valid. It's that there was a process and they were sticking to it. And, you know, one of the staff members very quietly said, if there is anyone who, you know, decides they're going to have an outburst, they will be removed from the room. And that landed with a thud. And there wasn't another outburst after that.
And we all know that there is a long tradition of fiery meetings. Those who have covered city council public sessions or Detroit school board public sessions, we know that people like to have their say.
Well, they invited enough people, and enough people came early that the room was full. So a lot of the people and a lot of the fire, they were outside.
Okay. Let's deal with outside in a few moments. Talk about what was going on inside. He took those 20 questions. What were those questions about? What did they focus on?
Oh, my goodness. They ranged from everything from a gentleman who had a jobs program that he said could bring thousands of jobs to Detroit, and Kevin Orr said, show it to me. I want anything that has anything to do with raising revenue or getting people jobs. One woman said, you can have two babies in 18 months, but you can't save the city of Detroit, so I don't get how you're going to do this. And he said, I'm confident I can do this. There were other people who asked about the priorities, and he reminded them again that public safety is the priority. He doesn't necessarily think that it will take more money, but if he can show them how to use the money that they do have more wisely. I mean, Detroit has the same problem it always has. They have officers who don't want to be on the streets. They work desk jobs, and they are administrators. And if you've got a crime problem the size of Detroit, there's no room for people to do that. They need to let civilians do that and get those guys and women out on the street. And I think that's something he's going to suggest, that this is how the department should run, because the hugest part of the Detroit budget is public safety. And if they can't figure out how to change the way they spend that, then you're not doing anything different. So it's not like he's there to just balance numbers. He's trying to make sure, you know, you can't take almost half of your budget and spend it on public safety and not be more successful than this. There's a better way to do this. And if they took some of the administrators and paid officer salaries for, you know, two people or three people instead of one, then all of a sudden you do have more people and you don't have to find money to pay for another 1,000 officers. But the questions ranged, you know, they were as diverse as the people who asked them, and people asked about everything. But it was all done in a very logical and a very polite way. As a matter of fact, one woman stood and she said, crime ran me out of Detroit. I think she said she lived in, either Oak Park or Highland Park or somewhere now. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, she lives in Harper Woods.
Okay.
But she said, but I do want to tell you that I appreciate your professionalism. I'm honored by it. And it was a very nice moment, and nobody scoffed or said, you know, no, he's not professional, get out. There was just none of that. It was just very, it was like a public hearing where people had their say. He answered every question. He didn't shy away from anything. But again, you've got some people who walked in believing this is not necessary, and some who walked out believing it's still not necessary, but not everybody. There were people who said, I had one gentleman say to me, well, how do they not understand that if you're broke and you don't have any money that you have to do something? And I said, don't know. Let me ask you a question. but that's a good question.
Well, Rochelle Raleigh, as you were outside the building, and as you say, there were tensions, there was some physical back and forth, I guess, police with some of the people. Was it more that they were upset that they could not get inside to be part of the meeting, or were they protesting, you know, the whole idea of Kevin Orr and the whole idea of an emergency manager?
They were absolutely protesting Kevin Orr, but none of that was unruly or disorderly. People were you know, they were standing and shouting with their signs, and you walk through them, and they were making their points and handing you literature. What happened was when all of a sudden the line stopped to get in, there was a crowd of people in the little vestibule of the law school that you have to stand in before you go through double doors to then go into the mock courtroom, which is like a conference room where they have events. And that was when things started to get unruly and people were pushing, saying, we need to get in. How dare you not let us in? And then there were people, for instance, I was with a member of the Financial Advisory Board who had a seat inside. And it's like, well, I've got a seat. I'm on the list. So once people heard there was a list, and it's like, oh, wait a minute. How do you get on the list? And it's like, oh, my God. But it wasn't really bad. I think people were their anger was righteous. If you're going to have your first public meeting with people who are very upset, it was one of the smallest places to have it. But again, it was a place that could be controlled, where you could have an environment where you could show the slides, which is what he wanted to do. And for what it did, it was an educational session.
Would it be something that if you could advise Kevin Orr and his team, would you advise them to, all right, let's have another meeting soon and have in a larger venue?
Well, I don't have to, because they advised him of that. One person used their question time to say this venue was too small, it wasn't the right place, you need to have it someplace different next time, and he said he would look at that.
Are you getting any wind, Rochelle, you or your team at the Free Press, of security concerns with Kevin Orr? And I'm going to say that because I was with my family at Detroit Metro Airport a week ago, and he was flying home to Baltimore, and he was flanked by security guards.
The guards were there last night, and I noticed that, and I tweeted about it, because there were four police officers, but there were also four security officers. And I thought, is this overkill or is this necessary? I know that people are angry. I know that he's been threatened. I have no idea what kind of threat. I don't think anything. I'm not sure whether any of them have had to do with death. But I know that if you have a big crowd of people who are angry and don't want him around and want to get in his face, you don't want him to go through that. But I don't know if it's like Wimbledon security or president security.
Gotcha.
But it seemed like a lot at the meeting.
Well, we know that Kevin Orr is going to meet with the city's debt holders on Friday. That is a big meeting with retirees and unions and bondholders. What are you looking for, and what should we expect out of this?
I want, if you're asking me as a journalist and me as someone who cares about retirees who cannot just go back to work because, you know, the city has done what it's done, I'm looking for a list of debt holders, what is owed and what they're willing to accept, so that we can see a number that he's trying to meet. Mm-hmm. I have no idea whether anybody has a plan. I know several people have created plans that could have solved this problem long ago, but you know, no one listened or looked at them. But I'd like to have a better sense of what's possible, because the $15 to $16 billion and the $200+ million, those two figures that, you know, represent the two different types of debt and deficit, I think that people would have a better understanding if they know that Detroit, and one woman, this was one of the questions, who do we owe and how much? And he said he would pull together that list. because he thinks that, you know, as a part of transparency, people should know. I want to know that number of people, that bottom line, and what they're willing to accept so people can see this is what we need to have right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be helpful, and I think that would help sway a few of those folks who still don't get how much money is owed.
Overall, as you have watched Kevin Orr from the moment the city met him and he was appointed and he met with reporters, and now here he is with the first public meeting, how would you grade him in terms of his act? I mean, he's on a stage and he has to take some very tough actions and hopefully win acceptance. How would you rate him?
I wouldn't. I mean, as a journalist, I think it would be wrong for me to make a judgment on all the different things that he has to do to appease and to help and to, quite frankly, deal with constituents and people who are reeling from this news that they're just accepting. I will say this. I know that there are people in Detroit who thought that an emergency manager was necessary and who feel like he's done this in a way that has been respectful and professional and, quite frankly, pretty quick. And there are people who would give him an F for showing up. They don't want him here. They don't care what he's done or how he's done it. So between those two groups of people, you know, when you go to school, you have more than one class. There are probably several things that you can grade him or rate him on. And I think on professionalism and on being someone who's willing to do the things he needs to do, including this public meeting. You know, you need to have one, but it could have gone much worse, and this one actually went well. So I that would be an interesting question for me to ask these different groups of people to see if anybody raises him up to a C because he wasn't disrespectful, or someone lowered him down to a B or a C because he's going to lease Belle Isle.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure yet because so much depends on Friday.
Rochelle Riley, columnist for the Detroit Free Press. Always a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you so much.